And we're holding on Zion Amud Bey is the first line of the wide lines. The Mishnah had said that we allow 12 months for Basula or 30 days for an Almana to prepare for her wedding. And then we said, if that time came and they haven't yet gotten married, then we said at that point, then he already has to support her and she would actually be allowed to eat truma. So we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, as we mentioned yesterday, are we talking about why is there the delay? Is it because she's getting cold feet? Is it because he's getting cold feet? Is it neither of the above, but there's an onus on one side or the other? Whatever the case, there are some cases where we're saying where since there's a delay, and therefore he's required to start giving her mezonos. And if she's an arusa to a kohen, then she would already be able to eat truma. Except we say the Mishnah says that later on the Chachamim decided not, and even if the 12 months have passed, still she can't eat truma until she goes into the chuppah. So in other words, there were three stages basically. The Gemara is going to tell us now that minat Torah should be allowed to eat truma since the erusin when she's arusa to a kohen. The earlier Chachamim made the rule not doing the expected 12 months for the erusin, but afterwards, yes. And then the later, the Chachamim said not even then, only when she actually goes into the chuppah. So let's deal with now the first and second stages. The Gemara says, Oma Ula, Dvar Torah, Arusa Bas Yisrael Echelis V'truma. Mina Torah, and Bas Yisrael, who is Arusa to a Koyin, should be able to eat truma. After all, the Pasuk describes who can eat truma from a Kohen's household. It says, if a Kohen acquires a person with his money, behind Nami Kinyan Kaspahu, well, he did Kedushin with money, and by that he acquired an Arusa. So Minat Torah, she should be able to eat truma. I mean, there are two other methods of Kedushin also, of course, there's Shtar and there's Bia, but we have in various places in Shas, it mentions that there's a Hekish that shows that all of them are the same, that any valid method of Kedushin is considered the same thing. So then we should say that Minat Torah and Arusa should be able to eat truma. Ma tam omru eina echelas. So Ula says, so why did the Chachamim say that she can't eat truma according to the original version until the 12 months have passed when the wedding date is expected to take place, and according to the Mishnah Achrona, not even then, and only when they actually have the chuppah. The reason is, Ula says, Shema yimzigula kos beveis avia, they might pour her a cup of wine while she's in her father's house, because after all, she's still living at home. So they might pour her a cup of wine of truma. And in other words, her chassan is going to send her some wine as a gift, but she's still living at home. So she may, she may forget that it's truma. After all, she's a Bas Yisrael. She's not used to handling truma. She may forget and give some of it to her brothers or her sisters. And they're not kohen, and they're not allowed to eat truma. So therefore, so we don't want her eating or drinking truma. And Mefarshim point out, by the way, I mean, the Gemara didn't have to mention wine, of course, it could have mentioned any kind of truma, but it's more likely to do that kind of thing mistakenly without thinking with a drink, where after all, you can drink very quickly, rather than with food, where more likely she'd be more likely to catch herself. So the Gemara says, Yehochi. So the Gemara says, Ihochi, well, if so, then he gives manvale nisunami. Then why taka, according to the original Mishnah Rishona, why don't we say the same thing when the 12 months are over? But by that logic, it should apply as long as she's living at home. So the Mishnah Rishona, the based in Shalach Reim Omru of our Mishnah that says that she can't eat truma until the actual chuppah, which is when she's going to live in her husband's house. So that now is very consistent, according to Ula. But the Mishnah Rishona that said that she can't eat truma during the first 12 months, but she could afterwards, even if she's still at home because the wedding hasn't taken place yet, seems to be inconsistent. And the answer is, the Gemara says, Hasam duchtam yachava. The answer is, at that point, since the chassan already has to support her, then he's going to set her up a special place to live. In other words, he's not going to have her. He's going to tell her, you know what, we can't get married yet for whatever reason, but instead of living at home, let me find a place for you to live. Let me rent for you a place where you'll live yourself. because after all, he's going to figure to himself, Rashi says, he has to support her at this point. He doesn't want that the money or the food he gives her for support is going to end up just being given indiscriminately to her family as well. So therefore, he's more likely at that point, once he's supporting her, to say that he's going to arrange for her to a place to live that's separate from her family. Well, in that case, then there's no worry about her giving the wine of Truma or any other food of Truma to her family. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Elameata, by that logic, if you're telling me that any time you have someone who can eat Truma living with other people who cannot, and you're telling me that the Chachamim are making a gzera that therefore she shouldn't eat Truma during that time, because she may give some to her family. By that logic, loket koyin l'Yisrael. What if a koyin is hired by Yisrael as a loket? A loket is a temporary worker, a seasonal worker. You hire him to help harvest your grain, or of course any other kind of temporary work like that. So usually the way they would do it is you would hire this person for the season, and he would board by you while he's doing the work. So now suppose that a koyin is hired by Yisrael as a loket, and he's boarding by the Kohen's house. So by that logic, maybe the Kohen should not be allowed to eat Truma while he's employed and staying by the Yisrael. Because after all, don't we have to be worried that the host family is going to end up eating together with him and that he may give them some Truma? And the Gemara answers, that's not necessary. On the contrary, the host, the Yisrael, is providing him food. On the contrary, would they take some food, some of the food that he himself brings? Would they take his own lunch that he brings from his house and take a share of it? No. So therefore, there's no concern in that case that they may end up eating truma accidentally. So Tosfos says, okay, well, what about the other way around? What about Yisrael who's working by koyanim? So Tosfos says, no, what it is like this. On the one hand, the Gemara is saying that the employee is bringing his own food. We don't have to be worried that they're going to take some of it away from him. On the other hand, he may want to, in order to curry favor with them, that they should like him better, he may take some of his food and voluntarily share it with them. So that's why the concern, that's why we would have thought to have the concern that maybe a Kohen working by Yisrael should not be able to eat Truma, and we're saying we're not worried about that. They're not going to take from his. After all, usually they're supplying him with food, and if he brings some food of his own, then it's not likely enough that the food that he brings is going to end up sharing with them. He might, in order to curry favor with them, but not necessarily. For the most part, they're feeding him. As opposed to when it's the other way around, when it's a Kohen hiring a Yisrael, and then the Kohen is giving the Yisrael food, he's going to be very careful and watch carefully that the Yisrael takes only what he's supposed to and not take extra. So therefore, there's no concern that a Yisrael is going to end up taking Truma. So in short, there's no issue. There's no issue with a locket of Truma being eaten by a Zer, but there is when it comes to an Arusa together with her family. So all of that is one reason. Now, Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda says a different reason why an Arusa after the 12 months is able to eat Truma, but not within the 12 months. Mishum Simpon. The reason is because there might be a Simpon. The word simpon, Rashi says, means basically something that is mevatel something else. For example, we find sometimes where you have, we talked about a couple of days ago, about a shoiver, about a receipt that might be written out. A person pays off their loan or part of it, and they get a receipt. So that receipt can be called a simpon because, in other words, it breaks or weakens the force of the shtar that it's in reference to. Reuven has a shtar that says Shimon owes me $100. Shimon has a simpon that says that he paid off part or all of it. So he has a shover that shows that he paid all or part of it. So that is a simpon that breaks or weakens the force of the other shtar. The same way over here, we mean the word simpon means mimivato something. So now what we mean is, in particular, he may find a mum in her. Now, later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about that a man, let's say, marries a woman and discovers that she has mumim that he didn't know about. So that that might be grounds for annulling the Kiddushin. He would never have been Mekadosh her if he had known of those Mumin. We'll talk about that later on in the seventh parak of our Masechta. So now the concern is that what happens if it turns out she has such a Mum? So now if he finds that, then it comes out the Kiddushin were betos. So then it comes out retroactively, she was never Mekadosh to him, and therefore there was no right, and therefore she had no right to eat Truma. So therefore that is why the, that is why says Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda, that she can't eat Truma during the first part of the Erusin. So if 12 months pass, then if 12 months pass, then already by that time, he'll have found out about any Mumin. But during the 12 months, we're concerned about that. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Hachi, so wouldn't the same thing apply even if she actually entered the chuppah, but they didn't yet do be'ila? So on the face of it, he's still not familiar with what mumim she may or may not have. Once they have relations, yeah, then he's going to discover any mumim that she has. But besides which, later on in the Masechta, it talks about an idea that before he actually does be'ila with her, he's going to check out thoroughly. He'll have his female relatives check her in the bathhouse or whatever and see whether she has any mumim. But if she went into the chuppah and there wasn't be'ila yet, then he doesn't necessarily know of the mumim. And yet, even the Mishnah Achrona, even the most stringent opinion in our Mishnah, the later Chachamim, agrees that once she enters the chuppah, she can start eating truma. They just said that you can't say that if the chuppah was delayed for whatever reason, that she can eat. But nevertheless, once she enters the chuppah, you could. So according to Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda's reason, why would that work? And the answer is Hasam Mivdak Badikla Vahadim Ayal. And the answer is before the chuppah, he's going to have her thoroughly checked out, and only then will he bring her into the chuppah. Meaning, as we're going to say later in the Masechta, he'll ask his female relatives, if he has, which most people do, when she goes to the bathhouse, then check her, take a look at her, and notice if there's any mumim on her that I should know about. So that'll take place before the chuppah. So therefore, Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda says that explains why once she's entered the chuppah, then there's no problem of simpan anymore. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Ela me'ata. So by this logic, if you're telling me that simpan is always a problem, Eved Koyen Shalachim Yisrael, what about if a Koyen buys an Eved Knani from a Yisrael, Loy Leichel B'Truma, on the face of it, the Eved should not be able to eat Truma right away, Mishum Simpon, for the same reason. There might be a Simpon, and then we're Mevatel the transaction because he's going to say it was Mekach Toros, and it turns out, therefore, that this Eved was not entitled to eat Truma. But we don't find such a thing. As soon as a Koyen buys an Eved, he can start eating Truma. And the answer is, the Gemara says, Simpon Ba'avodim Lech. When it comes to Avodim, Knanim, there's no such thing as a Simpon, there's no such thing as Mumim that are going to be Mevatel the transaction. Because let's consider, the Ida Avroi, if the Mum is on the outside of his body, then to begin with, the prospective buyer will have seen it when he's ready to buy this Eved. And then he would decide, is this something that I care about, or is it not? The Ida Gavoi, if it's a Mum on the inside, it doesn't matter. The Malacha Kaboy, he doesn't need the Eved to be a perfect physical specimen. It doesn't matter whether the guy has some kind of mum in a hidden area of his body or an internal part of his body that you wouldn't be able to see. Either way, that's not going to affect the fact that the Eved is going to do work. Now, what about, of course, you could have that he has some kind of disease internally, which is affecting him internally. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, in that case, generally speaking, you'll see something about it on his face. You'll see his face won't look quite as healthy as it normally does, and you'll know to start asking about that. So we're distinguishing. Gavoi would mean a mum on the inside, like on a hidden part of the body, on a part of the body that's covered by clothes. Doesn't matter. The malacha kabai, he needs the eved for malacha, so he doesn't care if there's a mum in a part of the body that he doesn't see anyway. B'shevas seiser, and if we're talking about something that's hidden or something that's inside the body, lo yichbaslay, again, he doesn't care. As long as it's not on the outside where he can see it all the time, then he doesn't really care about it. And what about, you can talk about, never mind mumim, what about bad qualities? Nimtze ganav oikov yustus. If it turns out that the Eved is a thief or a kuvyustus, Rashi says a kuvyustus is a kidnapper, Tosfos says it means a gambler, then it doesn't matter. He giyoy, then the buyer has received what he received anyway. In other words, that's not a valid reason to be mevatel the mekach, because the Rambam places that most avodim have bad qualities like that. You can't say, I bought this eved expecting him to be an upstanding moral citizen, because you should know avodim are not like that. So there's really nothing that you could find in an eved after the fact that you could argue I'm mevatel the mekach because of that. Either you knew about this mum beforehand, or you didn't know about it, but it's not something that you should be concerned about anyway, because it's on a concealed part of the body or even an internal organ. It's not something that he's a louse, that he's a no good nick, because avodim generally are that anyway. It doesn't matter. My ika. So what are the only possibilities that you find after the mekach that you might argue could constitute a sin point? Listim mizuyan. Is it that you find that the guy is an armed robber, so not just a regular thief like a pickpocket or something, but an actual armed robber, which is not normal to even an eved, even the low moral quality of avodim, we don't expect them to be listed in mizuyan, oy mucht of the malchus, or you might find that this eved has been written by the government, meaning, in other words, that he's been outlawed. There used to be a concept in various legal systems that you could have a person has committed such serious crimes that the government would basically put him outside the protection of the law. It would say anybody who finds him can kill him. It's almost I guess you could say it like being on the FBI's or something most wanted list, but maybe even more than that. But whatever, the law has been promulgated that anyone who finds this person can kill him with impunity. So you're going to say you found that this Eved is one of those things, a list in Mizuyan or Mucht of the Malchus. Even those, Hanu Kola Islahu, there's a coil for them in the first place. In other words, if that actually happened, if that had been the case before you bought this Eved, then there's a coil about it. People know when somebody's a list in Mizuyan or somebody is Mucht of the Malchus, it becomes well known. So then the seller has every reason to expect that you, the buyer, knew about that beforehand. And if you bought him anyway, then that's your problem. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that no, what Rabbi Natan, and Tosfos says that kol islahu, meaning they're so uncommon that you don't have to worry that there might be such a concern. It's true, Tosfos says, if in fact you did find one of these things, then the sale would be void. So therefore, you do have such a thing as simpan b'avodim, but they're so uncommon in the first place because they have a koyel, that therefore there's no concern that when a koyan buys an eved, it might turn out that eved is a list in mizuyan or mucht of l'malchus, and therefore that the sale is bottle because those such things are so uncommon. They have a coil that therefore there's no concern about that. So the bottom line is with Avodim, there's no real realistic case where there could be a simpon. So therefore Cohen buys an Eved, the Eved can start eating truma right away, as opposed to when it comes to being the Kaddish, a woman, where there is this real problem of simpon that Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda says, and therefore that would be a reason why she can't eat truma during the Erisin. So the Gemara says, Mechti bein lamar bein lamar la ochla. So the bottom line is, according to Ula, she's not able to eat truma during that time because she might give some of it to her family. According to Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda, she can't eat truma during that time because of simpon. So my benayu. So what's the practical difference between the two reasons? And the answer is ikka benayu kibol mosa v'holach. The answer is there's nafkaminis in them in the following cases. Number one, kibol, if the husband accepted the mumin. So in other words, he found out sometime during the kiddushin that his wife has mumin. That is, that his kala has mumin. And he says, you know what? It's fine. I can live with that. So then there's no problem of simpon anymore. On the other hand, then Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda's reason no longer applies. But Ula's reason that she might give some truma mistakenly to her brothers or her sisters is still a problem. The second case is Mosar. If the father gave her to the Shluchei HaBaal, we had earlier, we had in the previous perek, the various dinim about where she's going from her father's house to her chosin's house, and the chosin himself doesn't come to get her, but he sends shluchim to get her, and the father gives her to the shluchei Baal, and then she starts traveling together with them. Or you also have even that the father's shluchim are traveling together with the shluchei Baal. So then she's not with the family anymore. So now the family's not around. There's no concern that she may mistakenly give them some truma to drink. So according to Ullah, at that point, she should be able to eat or drink truma. On the other hand, there's still the problem of Simpon, because Ilchasen hasn't met her yet. He hasn't had a chance to have her examined for mumim. So therefore, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehudah's reason would apply. That's Mosar. And Vaholach would mean similarly. So Mosar would be that the father gave the Shluchei Baal, and Holach would be that the father started accompanying her and then turned around and went home. That's how Rashi learns. So in other words, according to Rashi, Kibel would be a case where Ullah would allow her to where Ullah would not allow her to eat and drink truma, and Rav Shmuel Bar Yehudah would. And Mosav or Holach are two other cases where it's the other way around. Ullah would allow it and Rav Shmuel Bar Yehudah would not. There's a Tosfos elsewhere in Kiddushin that learns differently, that Mosav or Holach is actually one and the same case. It means that the father gave her to the Shluchim and then left. And then there's actually an explanation that the Rishonim bring from the Ravid that says that all of them are one big case. It means the father received Kiddushin on her behalf, gave her to the Shluchei Baal, and then left. So in that case, in that one case, the father and the rest of the family are not around for her to mistakenly give them truma. So therefore, that reason of Ullah's wouldn't apply, but of Shmuel Bar Yehudah's reason of Simpon would still apply. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah that once there comes the point when the husband can give her truma. So again, according to the Mishnah Rishona, that was after 12 months have passed, or after 30 days have passed, respectively, when the wedding hasn't taken place yet, because it's been pushed off for whatever reason. So now we said, according to the Mishnah Rishona, as a Bas Yisrael engaged to a Kohen, Arusa to a Kohen, she's able to eat truma. So how much truma is the Chosin entitled to give her? So we said, Reb Taufin Aminosin La'akol truma fuller. Reb Taufin says that her chosin can give her all of the food he's supposed to be giving her as truma, and it's her, and then if she can't eat all of it truma, because there's going to be times when she's tamei, so fine, she will have to go and deal with selling some of it and then buying chulin instead. Rabbi Akiva said he can only give her half chulin and the other half and the other half truma, because he has to be able to provide for her for the time when she's not tamei. So the Gemara says, "Omer Abaya, machlokas bevas koyin l'koyin." That machlokas from Taufin and Rabbi Akiva is only when it's a bas koyin marrying a koyin. So as a bas koyin, she's already been used to growing up. She knows how to handle truma. She knows how to keep it tahor. She's accustomed to that. She knows what to do with truma when she's not tahor. She knows she's experienced in selling it. And so forth. So therefore, Reb Taufin says that in that case, you can give her all truma and leave it up to her to deal with what she's going to do with the part that she wants to eat it, that she needs to eat as cholin. Whereas Reb Akiva says, no, even then, you still have to give her half cholin. But if she's a Bas Yisrael marrying a Koyin, where she has no experience with handling truma, then everybody, even Reb Taufin, would agree that you have to give her half chulin, and only the other half can be truma, because you can't expect to impose on, you can't impose on her to deal with exclusively truma and to know how to keep it tahor and to know what to do with it when she can't eat it, to be able to be experienced at what price point to sell it at, and so forth. So even Reb Taufin would agree you can't do that. V'omer Abaya, also Abaya says another point, machlokas ba'arusa. The whole machlokas is during the time of the Erusin. So now she's still living at home during the Erusin. So now if she's a Bas Koyin, and again, that would be the case, Abaya said in his first statement, where Reb Taufin would say that the Chosin can give her all Truma, fine, she's living at home. She doesn't even need to bother selling the extra Truma to buy Cholin instead. She can ask her father to do that. Her father can do that on her behalf, to sell some of the truma and get to other koyanim and get cholin for it, because he has experience with that. Abel benisua, but if she's already gotten married, now you could have a case. Now normally she's getting married, she and her husband are living together, of course, you know, whatever they'll have in the house is what they're going to have, whether truma or cholin. But Rashi explains, further on in the perek, we're going to talk about there can be a case where a husband and wife, for whatever reason, are not living in the same place. It could be on a temporary basis, could be could whatever the case. You could have that. You could have that he instead arranges with a third party who's going to go and provide her. The husband will provide through an apotropos, through a guardian. So the Mishnah describes later on in the perek certain minimum amounts that the husband has to provide in that case. When they're living together, there's no particular minimum amounts because whatever you need to buy for the two of them to be able to eat. But when he's doing this through a sholish, through a third party, through an apotropos, then there are minimum amounts and the Mishnah describes them over there. So now let's say, for example, that we have this case. So we have she and her husband are living in separate locations for whatever reason. He's providing her food through an apotropos. So then Abaya is saying, since she's already fully married, divrei hakol mechtza chulin or mechtza truma, then everybody agrees that she gets only half, that the maximum you can give her is half truma, and the other half has to be chulin. Even Reb Taifun would agree, because Rashi says, then we have to apply the concept of kol kvod bas melach pnima. It's the kavod of the Jewish woman to stay in her house. So you can't expect her to. So you can't expect her to go and start selling the truma on her own. Her father and her brothers and other members of her family are not around often enough to be able to do that on her behalf. So therefore, even Reb Taifun would agree that you can't give her all truma, because after all, there are going to be times when she's tameh and she can't. And you can't impose on her to go and sell it, which would be a violation of kol kvod bas melach pnima. So the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi, what Abaya just said, both points of what Abaya just said, we learn in a braisa the same way. Reb Taifun Emen Noisim La Kol Truma, that Reb Taifun says in Mishnah, you can give her all Truma. Reb Akiva Emen Mechza Cholin and Mechza Truma. And Reb Akiva says only you can give half Cholin and half Truma. But the braisa continues, as Abaya said, Bamed Ronam Amurim, when is this talking about that they argue, Bas Koyin L'Koyin, when it's a Bas Koyin marrying a Koyin, Ava Bas Yisrael L'Koyin, but if it's a Bas Yisrael marrying a Koyin, and neither she nor her father has any experience handling Truma, Divrei Hakol Mechtza Chulin and Mechtza Truma, then everybody agrees that the maximum he can give her is half Truma, and the other half has to be Chulin. And Bamed Varnam Amurim Ba'arusa, and when is all that talking about? Only when she's in Arusa and living at home, Ava B'Nesua, but she's already married and living separately from her husband, Divrei Hakol Mechtza Chulin and Mechtza Truma, then everybody would agree that the maximum he can do is half chul, is half Truma, and the other half has to be Chulin. And the Braisa says, another opinion, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, remember? Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, it's not half, Noisten lo shtei yodis shol Truma, ba'achas shol Chulin. What he can do if he wants, not like Reb Taifun who says that he can give her that he can give her all truma, not like Reb Akiva who says he can give her half, but rather Reb Yehuda ben Beseira says he can give her 2/3 truma and 1/3 cholin. Now, what's the logic? Why 2/3 and 1/3? So the Maharshal explains, when you think about it, she's going to be he says actually simon l'dover. He doesn't say this is actually the reason, but he says there's a simon for this. You think about it. Typically, a woman has a 30-day cycle, of which usually she has 3 days of Re'iyah and Shiva Nekiyim. So therefore there are 10 days a month on average when she's not Tahor. So during those 10 days, which is 1/3 of the month, she's going to need to eat Chulin. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, based on that, let's make it that she can get 1/3, that she has to get 1/3 Chulin. And the other 2/3 can be Truma, because we can expect that 2/3 of the month she's going to be Tahor on average. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a noisim la akol truma. Rabbi Yehuda says that. Rabbi Yehuda says he can give her all truma, similar to what Reb Taifun said, but a little bit different, as we're going to explain in a second. So he can give her all truma. V'himei cheres for the kachas b'damim cholin. And she can sell the part that she can't eat as truma, because there's going to be times when she's tameh, and she can use that to buy cholin. So what's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Reb Taifun? Rashi explains like this: the fact is, truma costs less than cholin. Fewer people are interested in buying truma. First of all, only koyanim can eat it. Second of all, koyanim can eat it only when they're tahor, and it's a bother to make sure that it stays tahor. If it becomes tamei, then it becomes almost worthless. So therefore, when people buy truma, they usually buy it at a discount. So now, Reb Taifun had said that, let's say, for example, she needs let's say she needs 100 pounds of food a month. So the Tarfon says he can give her the entire 100 pounds as truma. Aye, it means that some of it she's going to have to sell and use it to buy chulin, and a pound of truma costs less than a pound of chulin, so it means that she's not going to get as much chulin. It means she's going to end up with only 90 pounds or 70 pounds or whatever of food. Reb Tarfon says, I don't care. He can he has to give her 100 pounds of food, so therefore I don't care whether all of it is truma and whether it comes out that she suffers a loss. Whereas Reb Yehuda is going to say that, no, what you have to do is you have to figure out the difference in value between truma and chulin, and he has to give her extra to compensate for that. So let's say, in our scenario over here, he would have to give her, let's say, 110 pounds or 130 pounds or whatever it is of we're saying that he can give her all truma, but then out of that, some of it she'll eat as truma and some of it she'll sell. And because chulin costs more, she'll be able to use that to buy the appropriate amount of chulin. And at the end, she'll end up with 100 pounds of food. So that's Rabbi Yehuda. The Braisa continues, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kol Mokum Shohuzkir Truma, Noisin Lakiflayim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, anytime that we're saying that he can give her Truma, he has to give her twice as much Truma as he would have given Cholin. This way, in other words, she can discount it much more. Like this, if he gives her just the bare amount, like Rabbi Yehuda is saying, sure, she's going to sell it at the usual discount for Truma, but why would anybody necessarily buy from her when there are other people selling truma as well for the same price, so that she's not necessarily going to find so many customers that are interested in buying from her because many other people are doing the same thing. So therefore, the Shimon Gamliel says, you have to give it to her. You have to give her much more truma than it would be necessary for her to sell in order to get the equivalent amount of chulin. That way she can discount this truma very deeply. And that way she's going to find many more prospective buyers. So the Gemara says, my benayu. So what's the practical difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, or not really what's the practical difference, but why are they arguing? And the answer is Ikka benayu tircha. The argument is about the tircha. How much are we matriach her to go and sell the truma? According to Rabbi Yehuda, we give her the expected amount that when she sells it at the normal price of truma, she'll be able to get chulin. It means she may have to work harder on selling it. Okay, so she'll do that. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, we want to make things as easy as possible for her. So fine, her chosin can give her truma. Her chosin can give her truma because, and according to Rabbi Tarfon, even all truma, because after all, he himself gets truma for free, he might as well. But he has to give her such a large amount of it that she can then sell it at a deep discount. So that way she'll find many more prospective buyers and then she'll sell that and get chulin instead. Okay, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. He can only give her maximum half truma and the other half he has to give her chulin. So the chulin she'll save for the times of the month when she's tamei and the truma she'll eat when she's tahor. And that way we don't need to be matriach her to sell anything at all. We said in the Mishnah, Yavam ain't a machal with truma. We said that a yavam cannot make it that she can eat truma, meaning when she's a shemeras yavam. So her husband died, she's not able to eat truma on the basis that her yavam, who is also a kohen, is soon going to do yibum with her. She can't do that. My timer, so why is that? Because kinyan kasper, omer achmana, because the pasuk reported before, that she has to be kinyan kasper. She has to have been acquired by his money, the money of Kiddushin, Bahai Kinyan de Ochivu. This is, the Yavam didn't acquire her with money. This was, she was acquired in Kiddushin by his brother. And as soon as his brother dies, then the Kiddushin is gone. The Yavam now has a different thing. As we learned in Yavamas, he has to now do Bia with her. And once he does, she becomes his wife for all purposes. And then therefore, so now we say the same way we said before, the same way as Kiddusha Kesef make her allowed to eat Truma Medaraisa, then so do Kiddusha Bia, and so does the Bia of a Yavam, because you have a Hekish between all of them. But while she's a Shemeras Yavam, then not. Tosfos actually says, though, that this pasuk that the Gemara is bringing is really only an asmachta. Minat Torah, maybe in fact she would have been able to eat during the time that she's a shemeras yavam. After all, she was able to eat truma while her husband was alive. Now her husband died, so therefore that the fact that she's a shemeras yavam doesn't necessarily take away her ability to eat truma. But min d'rabbanan was saying she can't, and the pasuk is only an asmachta. Unlike Rashi, who had said that who says that it's actually Daraisa. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, so during, we said there's 12 months for her to prepare for the wedding. And we said, we gave in the Mishnah a few cases. We said, one, where 6 months passed with her husband while her husband was alive. Then he died. And now the next 6 months, she's a Shemeres Yavam. Or the Mishnah had said all of them minus one day were in front of the husband, meaning that her husband was alive until one day before the 12 months was over, or the other way around, the husband was alive for only one day and then he died, and the Yavam, and now she's a Shemeres Yavam for the rest of the time, the rest of the 11 months and change. So in all those cases, she can't eat Truma. So the Gemara says, why do you need to say all that? Hashtim, Baal, Amrit Loi, if you're saying that she can't even eat Truma during the time when she's Mekudeshes, when she's Mekudeshes to the husband, and was saying that even if all but one day was with her husband alive, and you're saying that once she becomes a Shemeres Yavam, then she can't eat anymore. And we said that's true even if it's only one day. Bifnei Yavam Mibaya, how much more so if 6 months or most of it is in the presence of the Yavam, where the husband died a day after or 6 months after the Kiddushin. Or not after the Kiddushin, really, but after he told her, you know, we need to set a date for the wedding, what we called yesterday in the Gemara Tavia. And the Gemara says, you're right. Zuva in Sarach Lema Zukotani. This is one of those Mishnayas that says this and needless to say this. Usually Mishnayas are phrased the other way around. It says the lesser Chiddush and then it builds up to the greater Chiddush. But sometimes you have where a Mishnah will do the other way around. It'll say the greater Chiddush and then it'll say, yeah, and you should know also in this other case. Needless to say. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Zu Mishnah Rishon Bechola. We said the Mishnah Rishona was that, again, that she can eat Truma once the 12 months are over. And then, based in Shalach Reyam Omru, that no, she can't eat Truma until she actually enters the Chuppah. Now, we talked about before, we had the two reasons why, according to the Mishnah Rishona, we have to wait those 12 months anyway. We had Ula's reason because she might give some of the truma to her parents or her brother or sister to drink. And we had Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda's reason that there might be a sibling. So the Gemara says, my timer. So what's the reason over here why the Beis Din Shalach Reyem said that she can't eat truma until she enters the chuppah? So now, Oma Ula, the Tema, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. So now Ula said, or some say, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda said, Mishum Simpon. Here, the reason is because of Simpon, because the later Beis Din were concerned that after all, he might find a mum in her and be mevatel the Kiddushin. So the Gemara says, Bishleima la'ula. So according to Ula, the Mishnah fits together very well. The earlier Beis Din held that we have to wait 12 months because she might give some of the truma to her parents. And he said, once the 12 months are over and he has to start supporting her, then he'll find her a place of her own. So therefore her parents and brothers won't be around as often. And then the Mishnah Achrona is concerned about the matter of Simpon, which the earlier Beis Din had not taken into account. And therefore they're saying that until she enters the chuppah. But according to Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, the first part also, Kamais Mishum Simpon and Basrais Mishum Simpon, both the earlier Beis Din and the later Beis Din are both basing themselves on the point about Simpon. They're both saying that a mum might be discovered. So why did the earlier Beis Din say that once 12 months are over, then we're good? And the later Beis Din is saying we have to wait till she goes into the chuppah. So my Benai, what's the practical argument? Why were the earlier Beis Din willing to allow her to eat Truma at that point and the later Beis Din not? And the answer is, the argument between them would be about the external examination. In other words, again, when he tells his female relatives, his mother or his sisters or whatever, when you see my kala in the bathhouse, then check her out, see if she has any more. So now, the earlier Beis Din held that is a valid bedikah. So therefore, by the time he gets to the 12 months and has to start giving her mezonos, he'll already have had that checked out. So now there's no more problem of Simpon, because anything that she has, he would have already been informed about. And either at that point, he would have said, it's a mekach toros, I'm breaking the kedushin, or he would say, you know what, I can live with this. The Beis Din Shalach Reyem, Mar Sova, the later Beis Din figures, B'dikas Chutz Loishma B'dikah, that's not a valid B'dikah. When he himself is in Yichud with her, in the Chuppah, And that's going to lead to Bia. Then he will check her out then. But until then, he doesn't necessarily, just the fact that he had his relatives check her out is not necessarily strong enough. He still might discover something that they overlooked or something like that, or he may not fully trust them to give him an accurate report. So therefore, so the Beis Din Shel Acharim is concerned that even after 12 months, if we haven't reached the chuppah yet, then there still might be this problem of simpan, and therefore that would mean she can't eat truma until they actually do the chuppah, because then at that point he'll make sure that there's no simpan. Okay. The Mishnah says, "Hamaktish maisi de ishtay." Now we learned previously we said the husband is entitled to his wife's maisi yodeha, right? Whatever she makes, whatever she earns. Further on in the perek. We're going to talk about about what amount of maisi yodeha she's expected to do. You had, for example, a typical kind of women's work in those days was spinning thread. So then there's a certain minimum amount that she's expected to make of that. So that belongs to the husband. We learned before, and we're going to learn in the Gemara over here that the Chachamim made a takana. There's a quid pro quo over here. He gets her maisi yodeha. In return, he provides mezonos. So now, if he's makdish, the maisi yodeha of his wife, harezu oisav oichelas, so then she can still continue to do her work as before and still continue to get food from him, meaning he does not have the ability to make this maisi yodeha of hers kaddish, for reasons that we're going to say in the Gemara. Hamoister. Now, what about if there's extra? What about, for example, so now you could have, again, there's a certain minimum amount of thread, let's say, that she's expected to be spinning, and then corresponding to that is mezonos. Now you can have, what if she makes extra? So now the extra he also owns, and the reason for that is because further on in the sugya and further on in our perek, we're going to talk about that besides for that he gives her mezonos, the regular food and other maintenance, besides that, there's also, he's supposed to give her ma'a kesef, a small coin that she uses for her needs. For example, sometimes she needs money to do laundry, let's say, she needs money to go to the bathhouse or other things like that that are not necessarily a day-by-day thing like the way mezonos are, but nevertheless, little small household expenses like that that she needs to be able to do, household expenses or personal expenses or whatever, so he gives her for that more kesef, a coin, which in those times, of course, would be enough to pay for such a thing. So in return for that, he gets the moiser. So now, what about if he's makdish not the basic maisi yodeha, but rather the moiser, the extra amount that she makes? So then, So then Reb Meir says he has the ability to make that hektish, and Reb Yechanan Hasan lo says not, as we're going to see in the Gemara. First, we're going to talk about in the Gemara actually later, we'll learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, actually. At what point can that Moser become Kaddish? Okay, so the Gemara starts off with a related topic, which is then we're going to use our Mishnah as a proof. The Gemara says, Amar Avuna, Amar Rav, Yechoyla Isha Loimela Baila. A woman is able to say to her husband, Eini Nizonas Ve'eni Oisa. I don't want to be supported by you. I have either I'll go and I don't want to have to do malacha for you. So she's saying I'll support myself. Or she's saying I have another source of income or something. Although, you know, she's living off a trust fund or something. So I don't need your mezonos, and I don't want to have to do maisi yodeha for you. So Rav Huna says in the name of Rav that she has the right to do that. Because Rav Huna figures ki takinu rabbanon, what was the takana of the Chachamim? Now we said that there's this quid pro quo. You have maisi yodeha and you have mezonos. Which one is the main part of the takana? So he holds mezoni ikar. The main thing is that the Chachamim made a takana that the husband has to support his wife. We learned on Dafnam Zayin Memches a possibility that maybe it's daraisa. But we learned over there that there are Rishonim who say maybe only Daraisa, he would just have to give her like enough to keep her from starving, whereas Midrabanan, he has to give her the normal amount of food that a person in that time and place is expected to eat. Anyway, so Rav Huna says the main thing is the Takana of Mizonos. Umaisi Adeha Mishum Eva. So why did the Chachamim make the takana that he gets to Maisi Adel? Because otherwise there's going to be bad feelings between them. The husband is going to resent his wife. I'm giving and giving, and she's not even doing anything in return. So that's why the Chachamim made this takana of Maisi Adel. Well, then, therefore, so if she says, I don't want to be supported by you, and I don't want to have to work for you, that she has permission to do that. And in other words, because the whole takana was for her good, the point is, in other words, Rashi says like this, if it hadn't been for the takana, that for these dual takanas, then what would happen? She would take her maisi adah, and she would have to go and sell them in Osha. Let's say, for example, if she's spinning wool or whatever, so she would go and sell that wool and earn some money to support herself. But it could often be that that's not going to be enough. She makes that amount of wool, but it doesn't earn her enough money for the food that she needs. That is why the Chachamim made the takana that he should feed his wife a decent amount. Then Maisi Adah is because then there's going to be Eva. So now if she says, Eini Nizonis Veini Oisa, meaning that she's saying that I can make enough by myself, or I have an independent income stream or whatever, then in that case, then fine, Gazun to hate. Then she doesn't want this takana that was meant for her good. So fine, a person has a right to forego a takana that was meant for their good, for their benefit. By the way, the Ra'ah says an interesting point. He says once she says that, she can't change her mind again because you can't keep going back and forth like this. Other Rishonim disagree with that. Anyway, says the Gemara, Lema Messiah. Well, first of all, the Gemara says Mesvi. The Gemara says, I have a contradiction. The Braisa that we learned earlier in our Masechta that discusses the various things that the husband is entitled to and the various things that the husband has obligated to his wife, it says, Tiknu Mizonis Tachas Maisi Adah. The Chachamim made a takana of Mizonis in return for Maisi Adah. It sounds like Maisi Adah is the primary thing. The Chachamim wanted to make a takana that the woman's Maisi Adah go to her husband, and in return for that, so she's not just giving him something for free, then he gives her mizonis. So according to that, it comes out that the thing is mainly for the benefit of the husband. So how does she have the right to override that? And the answer is, Ema. And the answer is, Rav Huna would say, you correct the wording of the Braisa, or not really you correct the wording, but you correct the understanding, Tiknu Maisi Adah Tachas Mizonis. The other way around, the primary thing is mizonis, Maisi Adah is meant as a quid pro quo for that in order to keep the husband happy with his wife. So therefore, again, the takana is for her benefit. Therefore, she has the right to forego it. Okay, the Gemara says, Lema Messiah. Now, can we say that our Mishnah supports what Rav Huna is saying? Our Mishnah had said, Hamakdish Maisi Adeishtoi, that if he's Makdish her Maisi Yadav, Harezi Harehi Oisava Echelas, then nevertheless, that Hekdish does not take effect, and she still does her Maisi Adeh, and she still gets in return Mizonis for it. So my love the Mizonis. Presumably, we're talking about that the regular case where he's supporting her. So he has nechosim. He's saying, "I'm ready to support you. I'm ready to give you food." And nevertheless, the Mishnah is saying that she has the right to say, "I don't need your mezonis. I'll work and I'll earn my own way." So in that case, then our Mishnah would be saying what Rav Huna is saying. And the answer is loy b'she'en an mezonis. Not necessarily. It could be we're talking about that he's not supporting her because he can't afford it. So Tosfos points out, by the way, Nizonis doesn't mean that he's actually supporting her, means that he's ready to support her. He's offering, I can give you support. And she's saying, I don't need your support. I'll work and earn my own money. But now the Gemara is saying, not necessarily. The Mishnah could be talking about where he's saying, I can't really afford to support you. So now the Mishnah is saying that he doesn't have the right to take her Maisi Adeha and do whatever he wants with it, such as declaring it hekdesh. Or says Ibishain and his own is my memra. Well, then what's the chiddush? Even according to the opinion, and this is a machloikus in various places in Shas, whether we had it earlier in our Masechta actually too, that even, there's an opinion that a master of an Eved Knani can say to the Eved, Aseimi, you have to work for me, the Eni Zonach, and I'm not going to support you. You have to go around and beg for tzedakah. So there is such an opinion that a master can do that. And the reason is basically because it's not really going to be a long-term thing. The Eved eventually is the Beistin doesn't really have to step in. The Eved himself is not going to tolerate that for very long. Sooner or later, he's bound to run away or something. So therefore, the master himself is going to soon enough realize this isn't working out, and he's going to go and start supporting the Eved. But he is allowed to do that. But fine, Hani Mili be'Eved Knani, that applies only to an Eved Knani, Deloik Sibbe Imach, where after all the Pesach doesn't say that he has to be with you, in other words, that you have to keep him you supported in the same style as you. Aval Eved Ivri, but even by an Eved Ivri, you can't do that. Dechtibbe Imach, because the Pesach says he has to be with you. Last week's parasha, Lo Yetzim Mi'imach, Kitoy V'imach. So you have to support him to the same standards as you have. The famous thing: if you can't have him sleep on the floor and you sleep on a bed, etc. All those kinds of things. So you can't do that with an Eved Ivri. You have an Eved Ivri working for you. You're required to support him. V'choshekin Ishtay. How much more so a man's own wife? So what's the Haba Mina? If the Mishnah is talking about Nizonis, where the husband is offering her Mizonis and she's saying, I don't need you a Mizonis, I'll pay my own way, then fine. Then that fits with what Rav Huna is saying. And then that would support what Rav Huna is saying. But if you're going to tell me the Mishnah does not necessarily support Rav Huna, and it's talking about where the husband says, I can't afford to give you Mizonis, of course he doesn't have the right to Maisi Adair. What's the Chiddush? And the answer is, safer it's richle. The answer is you're right. It's not really according to that. It's not the reisha that's the chiddush. The reisha is being brought only in connection with the safer, where it said about moisa, where you have the extra amount beyond what she's usually expected to produce. Rameyo oima hektish, Rameyachin asandla oima cholin, where Rameyo and Rameyachin asandla argue whether he has the right to be makdish that. So that would be. So really the chiddush of the Mishnah is that part. So you could say the Mishnah is talking about where she's not getting supported by her husband. So of course he's not entitled to Maisi Adeha. If he's not supporting her, he doesn't get the Maisi Adeha. But nevertheless, we could still say that he's entitled to the Moser, and that's what Meir says he is, and therefore, that he could be Makdash. And Rabbi Yechonel Sandlo says even that, then not. Okay, Moser says, Pliga the Rish Lakish. All of what we just said, of what Rav Huna holds, disagrees with how Rish Lakish learns it. Da'am Rish Lakish, loy tema tema de Rameyo, mishum de pasava adam makdish davar shaloi bala olam. Don't think, says Rish Lakish, that Rameyo's reason in our Mishnah is how could he be makdish her maisi adeha, or the moiser. After all, it doesn't exist yet. We don't know whether she's going to produce moiser, and you can't be makdish something that doesn't exist yet. So don't think it's that Rameyo says that you can be makdish something that doesn't exist yet. Ela, time of the Rameyer, mitoch sheyochol lekoyfal maisi adeha. Rameyer says, since the husband has the right to require his wife and even to force his wife to produce maisi adeha, which we're going to talk about in a little more detail later in the parak on daf samach gimel, since he has that right, nase koyma lo yiktu sheyodayach laoseha. Therefore, when he says now that he wants to be makdish the moiser, it's the equivalent of saying your hands should be hektish to the one who made them, meaning to Hashem. Now the hands exist, not a davar shaloi b'olam. So in other words, Reb Meir holds. So in other words, Reb Shlokish is explaining that Reb Meir holds that a person she does not have this option of eini nizonis v'eini osa. She doesn't have this option of saying I don't want you to support me, I'll support myself. Reb Meir, according to Reb Shlokish, would be saying you can't do that. So therefore, and the husband has the right to be makdish his wife's maisi adeha. So the Gemara says v'holoi omol ahochi. The fact is, he didn't say that. He said I'm makdish you maisi adeha, or I'm makdish the moiser. He never said the words yiktishu yodayich loisayim. The answer is kiven desham inin leilad meir. Since we find in a different context that a mayor says einon moitzi dvarav vatola, when a person says something, when a person makes a neder, he doesn't make it for nothing. The example is, Rashi says, in Masechta Erchin, now you have like this, the Torah tells us about Erchin in Parshas B'chol Kosai, various ages and male or female have different Erech, but the Torah does not prescribe there an Erech for a baby under a month old. So now, what happens if a person says about a baby less than a month old, I'm pledging that baby's Erech to the Beis Mikdash? Does that have any effect? So the Chachamim say there no, because a baby under a month has no Erech. Reb Meir says, no, the fact is that a person knows that a baby under a month has no F. Since he made a neder, then it must be, he's not just saying something worthless, he must have meant, instead of erech, he must have meant dummy. And dummy do apply. Dummy means the actual value of that person if they were to be sold as a slave. So a baby has a market value. So he must have meant that. Not the erech, which doesn't exist yet, under a month, but rather the dummy, the market value. So we see the mayor holds of such a concept. So the same thing over here. Given that he can't be makdish something that doesn't exist yet, namely for Ma'isi Yadeh, then therefore we can assume that when he said, I want to be makdish Ma'isi Yadeh, what he really means is to be makdish her hands, that the products of her hands, or Ma'isi Yadeh, are going to be hekdish. And so Rav Meir says he has the ability to do that, but that would be appointed a mayor. Rav Meir would be saying then that that she doesn't have the rights to say any nizonis v'ani osa. So Rish Lakish's understanding disagrees with Rav Huna's understanding that everybody agrees that she could say that. So the Gemara says, "V'savar a mayor in on a makdish davar shloi b'alolam." Are you telling me a mayor holds a person cannot be makdish something that doesn't exist yet? And that's what Shlokish is saying, that that's why we have to reinterpret what he said to say, "I'm not makdish your ma'isi yodav, which don't exist yet, but rather your hands, which do exist." How could that be? V'hatani, we learn in a brisa, ha'oyma la'isha hareat, if a man says to a woman, hareat, he gives her money of kedushin, and he says, hareat mekudeshes le'achar she's gayer, so he's a goy, for example, he gives her money of kedushin, saying, I am giving you this money for that the kedushin should take effect after I become a ger, oy la'achar she's gayeri, or he's a Jew and she's a goyta, and he says, after you become a geyeris, or la'achar she's shtachri, la'achar she's shtachri, or he's an Eved Knani, and saying, this will take effect after I'm freed, or it's in Shifcha Knanis, and it should be after you're freed, or La'achar Shiyom was Bailech, or it should take effect after your husband dies. He gives it to an Eishas Ish saying that. Or after your sister to whom I'm currently married died, where as long as the sister is alive, then the other sister is an erva to him, as we learned in Yevamos. So now he's saying, right now I'm married to your sister Rachel. I'm giving you these kedushin Leah to take effect. As soon as Rachel dies, then these kedushin should take effect. Or that she's a shemeres yavam, and he says after your yavam gives you chalitza, then these kedushin should take effect. Now, in all these cases, the kedushin are not able to take effect now because either he or she is a goy or an eved, and kedushin are not. And kedushin are not relevant to them at all. Or it's a matter of arayis, she's an eishes ish, or she's his wife's sister, or we're following the opinion over here. We learned in Yevamos, there's machlokes, whether kedushin are toifus in a shemeres yavam, or braise is following the opinion that they do not. Anyway, so the mayor or mekudeshes. So the mayor says that she is mekudesh. The kedushin do take effect eventually when these things happen. So we see that a mayor says that you could do something that's loy bala olam, something that doesn't exist in the world yet. And the answer is, the Gemara says, may hahi ein. You're right. Based on that, you're right, actually. Based on that braisa, you could say that, yes, Rav Meir holds that odom makna dava shaloy bala olam. May ha, but from our Mishnah, lekala Mishnah minah, you wouldn't be able to show it from that, which is why Rish Lakish is saying that in our Mishnah, we don't necessarily have to say that Rav Meir is saying it's on the grounds that the odom makna dava shaloy bala olam. Instead, we can say the mayor is saying it on the grounds that what he said, that your ma'isi yadeh should be kaddish, can instead be reinterpreted in a way that doesn't even require dava shaloy bala olam, namely where he says your hands are kaddish, and to the extent that anything that they make, either the hands themselves, of course, don't become kaddish, they're attached to her body. But the point is, in other words, that anything that they produce becomes kaddish. So he has the right to do that, says Rav Meir. But again, that was according to Rish Lakish's understanding. Meanwhile, we had Rav Huna's understanding that that's not the case. The husband can't be makdish his wife's ma'isi yadeh because they don't belong to him fundamentally. I mean, they do belong to him, but fundamentally they belong to her to the extent that she could say, I don't want to have to give them to you and I don't need your support. I'll pay my own way. And if she does that, then that's effective, says Rav Huna, which is in fact the halacha. And therefore, then her ma'isi yadeh don't belong to him. So therefore, even before that he can't be makdish them in advance, because at any time she could make such a condition. Okay.